As much you probably saw or are aware of, Steve Worley is visiting us today. And I just went back on the mission board to check the dates, but we've been supporting a missionary in Nigeria since 1983, 36 years ago. So Marshall Kete we supported until he died. And then in the process of finding someone else to support, we picked up Joshua B. Hammond and Danjuma Jakwami, and at that time started supporting Steve. And he's a big help to us because he goes over there, but he also speaks the language and knows the culture and can provide us, the insider information, since a lot of times it's difficult to communicate. At times we've had trouble with mail, which was undependable. Sometimes we complain about our postal system, but theirs was stealing our money out of the mail and set up electronic transfer. In 1996, we picked up Mohammed the King, and in 2008, we started supporting Daniel Boy, who is a preacher at the School of Jail. So he is a teacher of preachers, so we started out supporting preachers, but then supporting preacher Dan Boy. So I want to introduce him this morning and let him give us a little bit of status on the things going on in Nigeria, and especially in Jos and the school there. Please join. Steve is coming.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning.
Good morning.
You'd hear me in Nigeria, you'd hear me say, Gamma Allah Yayi Kam Nardaniya Harabadadan. I Papa Shikadi Domadukawana Yana Baraka Reshi Kalrai Har Abada. You're impressed, right? They preached that in the first century. That's John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. The gospel is in so many different languages. And it's the power that you read about in on the scripture reading this morning. Next year, I celebrate 35 years of work in northern Nigeria. I mean, we've been a long time together, you and I. A long time together. I'm going to introduce you to your preacher over there. You've been supporting a preacher over there since 2002. His name is Daniel Boyd. He's about this tall. He got a wife and three kids. He's a great guy. He preaches. He's teaching. He's got his master's degree in Bible. He's done his PhD program. He'll be a doctor, Lord willing, in a couple of years. I'm going to move fast, and I'm going to use a little levity, because if I don't, I get real serious, and I start crying. And you don't want me to start bawling. We started, Phoebe and I, and took the two kids, our two teenagers, and we went to northern Nigeria back in 1985, 35 years ago next year. We went into northern Nigeria, where it's the largest black populated nation in the world. Northern Nigeria had 52 million Muslims. They have more Muslims in northern Nigeria than in the country of Iraq. No white missionaries from our brotherhood have ever been up there, and they told us whenever we went over there and we told them we were going north, they said, Brother Worley, you go north, those Muslims will eat you. Well, they didn't know I spent 22 years in the United States Navy before going north, and I'm here to testify that Muslims do not like seafood. We went up there, and there was 35 churches scattered among 52 million people, and now we have over 350 congregations, and I'm going to show you some of the work that's going on, some of the work, and this is your work. You were in it from the beginning. I'm going to tell you stories that you won't believe probably, but they'll be entertaining and they'll be truthful. And this congregation has had influences beyond your scope of imagination. God has done things with this congregation that I tell people, and I know they don't believe me sometimes. I'm going to take you to the country of Chad. It's French speaking. There were no churches of Christ in Chad or the country of Niger, which is French-speaking too, when we started working together. Now there's congregations in Chad, and the work is growing in both of those countries. And then I'm going to show you a place in Uganda, all the way over into East Africa, that we've been working since 1992. And we take off. Of course, Islam is our greatest enemy, I would think, besides Satan, in northern Nigeria or northern Africa especially. We convert Muslims by the hundreds. We've converted since we've started in our weekend evangelism program at the School of Biblical Studies, JOS. We send every student, every teacher, every weekend in evangelism since our inception 30 years ago. We've baptized over 13,000 people in just our weekend evangelism program at the School of Biblical Studies, JOS. And we're continuing to grow. Of course, JOS is located in the northern highlands of Nigeria. It's cool weather there, really, and you can go. I've taken people from this congregation to JOS. I told the guy's wife, if you give me $50 extra, I'd take him one way. I brought him back, though. And you can come, because Nigeria's people, it's more people than you can imagine. It's the largest black populated nation in the world. South Africa has 38 million people. Kenya has 28 million people. Nigeria has 170 million people. It's that many people. We have 10,000 churches of Christ in southern Nigeria. The Nigerians love to read, and they know the scriptures, and the churches are growing by leaps and bounds. And we started the school to supply the churches with native preachers, and we've been doing that. We have over 600 graduates on the field right now from the School of Biblical Studies in JOS. You can see if it's moving and if they need to go somewhere, they ride on it. They load up. When we first went to Nigeria, we bought some land, and we started the School of Biblical Studies in the north with 9 students. We built us a library, and put 30 tons of books in that library. We built us an administration building. We built us a classroom block building. These buildings were all built by hand, and no machines. The ladies carried the cement on their head pans on their head to pour the floors to this buildings. A Nigerian woman can carry 60% of her body weight on her head. That means a 100-pound woman can carry 60 pounds on her head all day long and a baby on her back. I'm here to testify to you this morning that after 30 years in Nigeria, my wife Dolores carries nothing on her head. Not a thing. Women have built this before us. We built a guest house. This is where you'll stay when you go. You stay in the guest house. I took my 2 granddaughters, 9 and 10, a couple of years ago for a month here, so it's safe. This is our old male dorm. Now it's our female dorm. Last year, we went over and we went co-ed about 3 years ago. So last year, when I went over, we moved the male students over to our new dormitory that we built and put a wall around our female students. We have about 30 female students now. When we first started, we built buildings. We kept starting building churches and building buildings. And then I took my wife over and she started teaching ladies classes and teaching the ladies how to teach Sunday school classes, and then the women started teaching the women, and we've got women, and all the women wanted to bring kids and start Sunday school, so instead of church buildings, we had to build classrooms, and now the women are doing seminars, there's women's seminars all over the place, and the church has just exploded over there. It's just, the Christians are everywhere, and we're moving, and we started getting female students. They wanted to learn the Bible. They wanted to learn how to teach ladies. And so we've got about 30 students now. We have our first nuptial. We had our first marriage this year. A Zimbabwean student came. came from Zimbabwe in South Africa, did 4 years in our degree program, and married one of our girls and took her back to Zimbabwe. So it's the same old thing. Life moves on. People get married, preachers find wives, and then they start churches, and then they travel all over the world. This is our new dormitory building that we built. It'll hold 240 students. We finished this up last year together. We painted it up. The kitchen's down on the right. All the students have to cook their own meals. We don't have central heating. And water's at a premium all the time. It's a piece of work, though. We put terrazzo floors in, and all of this was built by hand, too. Everything you see on campus was built by hand. This was our old kitchen. Students get up, they have a cup of tea, a hot tea, and a piece of bread for supper, and then they have one other meal during the day that they cook in one pot. And this is our new kitchen. It's coming along. We're going to build this to where they have a little kerosene stove. Each student has a little kerosene stove, and about five of them go together, and they make soup and do a lot of soups. This year we started. I went over in May. I went over in February and bought 250 chickens. We're going to teach our students farming. We have a two-year ag program, teach drip irrigation farming. We take this all over Africa. Now we're going to start raising chickens and selling eggs and teaching our students how to do poultry. So our preachers can raise chickens whenever they graduate. In early May, I decided we need a chapel building, so we took one of our tractors and built a building here. This is all done by hand. We made our own blocks. We put the metal on the roof this month. We'll put the metal on the roof. This will be our chapel building. We have 133 students now on campus. That's a lot of people, let me tell you. A lot of people. We have four different courses of study. There's 36 students graduated in May during our graduation. We have a graduation every May, and we have a national lectureship. Hundreds of people come. And if you'd like to come, you can come and teach on our lectureship. Do work at our campus. We've graduated, like I say, over 600 Christians since we started the school, and we've baptized over 13,000 on our weekend evangelism program. The thing we did, we decided that a lot of our schools will turn out preachers but not evangelists. And we wanted to have evangelist preachers to graduate from our school. So we made it a rule in the beginning that every teacher, every student, every weekend is spent in evangelism. So we teach them during the week, then we send them out during the weekend, and they evangelize the local villages all around Nigeria. And we have extension training programs to where our teachers, that when they school breaks for the summer, our teachers will go and teach at different centers around Nigeria. It's almost like internet, taking courses on the internet. But we send our teachers to different locations around Nigeria. We take the school to those locations for 3 weeks every year. And the local farmers and church members can take our college-level courses. And we graduate them whenever they get 3 years of study, 2.5 to 3 years of study completed. These are the people I take over. They're church members of the church that want to go to Nigeria. They want to see the work that you guys have been doing for the last 30 years. You are the only church that I know of, that I've worked with, that's brought their preacher here. You have worked in World Bible School for years, way back in the 90s. And you decided, you called me up one day, I was down in Alabama and going to school, And you said, we're bringing our follow-up evangelist to Hagerstown to preach a gospel meeting. And you brought a man that's in his 40s years old named Marshall Ikaite, who had a wife and about 8 kids. You brought him to Hagerstown, Maryland, and he preached a gospel meeting and had one baptism. Can you imagine? And you didn't have anything to do with him, no work for him to do after the gospel meeting, so you flew him out to Texas to visit with some of his World Bible School teachers that he corresponded with for years, and then he had some time left over, and you sent him down to me in Alabama, of all places, okay? I'm supposed to put up with this guy for a week, and, okay? I've known him, I've worked with him for years, and he flew him down to Alabama, and he stayed with me for a week, and we're riding around, you know, and I'm a Tar Heel from Western North Carolina originally, but at that time I lived in Alabama, and if you're a guy in Alabama, you have to have a truck. You know, I mean, every guy in Alabama has a truck. You have a car, but we have a truck. The truck has to have 11-inch bumpers so you can put your abortion stickers and gun stickers on the bumpers. Okay. And so I'm driving around with Marshall in the truck one afternoon in the summertime. Got the windows down, and I said, Marshall, I said, he's really a studious kind of guy, too, quiet kind of guy. I said, Marshall, I said, you've been to the north of my country where you preached the gospel meeting in Hagerstown, Maryland. You flew to Texas and saw the western part of my country. Now you're in the beautiful state of Alabama. I said, how do you like my country? Man, he just sat there, and I thought, I didn't think he heard me. He sat there, and I said, did you hear what I said? And he said, yeah, I heard what you said. He said, Stephen, he said, let me say something. He said, when people in this country die, they have no place to go. I said, what did you say? Are you making light of my country? What does that mean? He looked at me, he said, Stephen, this is heaven. He says, you have water in every house. You have electricity around the clock. He says, you have everything imaginable at your fingertips. This is heaven. It's true. God help us, it's true, brother. There is nothing in this country that we want that we can't get, borrow, buy, or loan. Or beg. It's all here. God has blessed us above every country in creation. In creation. I don't tell you that to make you feel guilty. I tell you that to make you feel blessed. We have it all. We have it all. And I tell you that to make you feel blessed so you can use it and enjoy it and keep on going and enjoy life. There's nobody going to shoot you because you're worshiping God in spirit and in truth this morning. When I worship in Josh, sometimes you hear the bombs going off in town, and you don't know whether you're going home for lunch or home for lunch. We have everything imaginable. Okay, these are the people that come. They say, I had a man in Searcy, Arkansas, in his 80s. He said, Stephen, the trip to Nigeria changed my life. Changed his life. Enriched it. Had a good time. You need to come with us. This is our staff on everybody on campus. This is the whole college. This is everybody from the grass cutter to the teachers to Daniel Boyd's bottom left. Your bottom left. He's the guy on the bottom left there. And this is our staff. Daniel Boyd's second from the right there. You see how short he is. He's really a short guy. He's from Tuftville, Alabama. He's got a wife and children. I'll show you a picture for him in a minute. All of our teachers have master's degrees or above. Five of our teachers are in the PhD program. Two of our teachers have doctorate degrees. There are 8 different tribes represented on staff. Now, we have racism in America. They have tribalism in Nigeria because they're all black. I mean, they're all black. So they have tribalism in Nigeria, and a man, a boy is raised in a village to say, here's mom and dad, say all those Igbos are liars, all those Yorubas, they don't tell the truth, and you can't trust the Hausa and an Ibibio will lie to you every day of the week. And they're raised with these prejudices that are tribalist. And then they come to Jos and they see our teachers at Jos. They'll see a Yoruba working with the Hausa, and the Hausa working with the Ibibio, and the Ibibio working with the Igbo, and a woman on staff. And they'll, for 4 years, they'll see all the tribes that are working together and teaching Christ crucified, and teaching unity in Christ, and teaching working together, teaching all men are created equal. And they see it for 4 years. And then when they come out and graduate from our school, they've seen it for 4 years, and then they can practice it for the rest of their lives. And we not only teach against tribalism, but we practice it openly. All of our teachers do it. And it's something to watch these guys all get together and work together, because they're all from different tribes. They're all from different states. They all have speak two or three different languages, and they all get together. This year we have 17 foreign in August. I was over there in August when all the students came for this year, starting this year. We have 17 foreign students. So they're coming from all over the world. We haven't got our first American students yet, surprisingly enough. But we have 17 students start this year. You can see four of them came from Liberia. Four women came from Liberia this year, too, all the way across Africa. This is our female population, student body. You can see the colorful group, colorful kids, and they're all looking for young husbands, right? This is Daniel Boyd, B-O-I is how you spell his name. That's his wife Deborah in the blue there, and that's his daughters and his boys. He's got, like I say, he's got his master's degree. He's worked with World Bible School for about 5 or 6 years, and then he got his master's. When you sent him in to a school to get his master's degree, he got his master's degree. He's teaching at the School of Biblical Studies, Joss. He's teaching classes there, Bible classes. He's also started a church down about 10 miles from Joss, down there in a place called Bukuru. They raised up a building. This is the church in Bukuru. Daniel started this congregation on his own time while teaching at Joss, and did all the evangelism down in there with our students. Raised up this building, and they're worshiping in spirit and in truth every Sunday morning. So when you're worshiping here 6 hours before that, they've already completed their worship service in Bukuru with the Boyd family. So you have you can say you have a boy in Nigeria. His name is B-O-I. He's a great guy. He's really short. And he's very small, and he's a great guy. He loves the Lord, and he preaches and teaches. He's got a good family. Last year, we bought a water truck. The one thing that you have to survive physically is water. If you don't have water, you die. That's the rule of life. And we bought us a water truck, and now when that tank on the right, right next to our male dormitory goes dry, we can go down for, I think, about $20 and get a tank of water to carry us over. We have our own borehole that we do, too. This is where some of our graduates are. Some of the graduates that this congregation is responsible for, because they're on the field. You're the reason they're on the field. You're part of the reason they're on the field. Without you, they wouldn't be there. And they're all over the world. Zimbabwe to Bangladesh. We have two that's teaching at a school in Bangladesh for the last 10 years. We have graduates in Australia, and they're coming all over the world. About 6 years ago, you were part of a the Boko Haram in Nigeria, which is a Muslim terrorist group, took over the northeastern part of Nigeria, the red part of Nigeria there, and they brought in federal troops and they killed all, burned all of our church buildings down, 18 church buildings. They burned all the banks, all the schools, all the villages, and displaced millions of people. And we went in there and I sent a group in there, a couple of preachers in there, to find church members that wanted to send their kids out of that area, and we would board them through high school for 4 years. I asked them to bring me 30 kids. They brought me 444. We graduated them 2 years ago and sent them off to wherever they wanted to go. Some even went back to the farms, but we took 444 high schoolers in different classes and sent them through high school. They got a good education, and we bought some land out there outside that area of the country, and built a church building, raised up a church where they had their devotionals for 4 years. And you heard this morning in Isaiah 55:11. So will my word be which goeth forth from my mouth. It will not return unto me empty, without accomplishing what I desire, and without succeeding in the manner for which I sent it. The power is never in the messenger. The power is in the message. Let me repeat that. The power is in the message, not the messenger. The word convicts. It's the word that convicted an old Navy chief just out of Vietnam so many years ago, that the Lord reigns, that there is a God in heaven, and that old chief wasn't a God himself, and he became a Christian. It's that word that convicts. It's that word that brings you through. It convicts kings. It convicts chiefs. It convicts people all over the world. And all we have to do is get the message to the people. Now, I'd love to preach. I love to teach. We go into villages sometimes where we start talking about Jesus and they say, ooh. And you got to start back all the way to Genesis and start teaching sacrifice and bring them all the way up through the cross. But in a lot of places, they know about Jesus. They know about the cross. They know about salvation, and we preach it. The country, in the middle of the country, is the city of Abuja. We have 27 churches. No, we have 47 churches, congregations in the city of Abuja. We've got over 3.2 million people in Abuja. It's a federal capital. They built it, and churches are there. We've made up a correspondence course from a World Bible School teacher that worked for years in World Bible School. She wrote her own courses, and we got those courses, and we got a church building in Abuja with a church of about 350 strong that let us have a room. We took two of our evangelists from our school, and we set up a computer with that course and put the course on the computer. And now we have it, a Bible correspondence course available in Nigeria, supported by Nigerians and mailed in Nigeria. Those two men can do 82 courses a day, grading them on the computer, and we're moving because the Word of God convicts. And Nigerian Muslims, you can't go knock on their door and chop your head off. So what we do is we send them Bible correspondence courses, and they can study in the privacy of their home, and then they can meet us places, designated places, and we can baptize them into Christ after we study with them. But that's how we're reaching them now, part of it. In the country of Chad, when we started together, we had no Churches of Christ in Chad. Now we have 35 preachers in Chad. We have over 900 kids. These are three of the men that went back home and graduated from the School of Biblical Studies. Johnson went back home down in the rainforest in southern Chad and started a school. They started churches, and they built a church building. That's the church building at Donamanga. It's made out of mud and tin for a roof, and it's all by hand, too. So there's no running water, no electricity. Christi there. And so I can only go down for maybe a week and a half, 10 days, and I start getting sick. So I leave. But it's about 10 days every 2 years I go down there. But the preachers all speak French, the people speak French, and they do their own thing. They work, and this is a preacher's lectureship that I went to. I have to have a translator. And, you know, sometimes you'll be speaking, and you'll have I'll be speaking in English, and then I have a guy in Igbo, and he'll be speaking Igbo, and another one will be in Yoruba, and another one will be in Hausa, and I'll say, Jesus said, and a Yoruba guy will say, Yeshu Yache, and an Igbo man will say, Jesus said in Igbo, and a Hausa man will say, Jesus said in Hausa, and by the time he gets back to me, I forgot what Jesus said. A 15-minute sermon lasts 45 minutes, because all these guys translate for you, and they get caught up in your sermon sometime and really get enthusiastic, and you'll say one sentence, and they'll go on for 10 minutes, and you got to reach over and say, wait a minute. You preach. You're not supposed to be preaching. You do what I do. You say what I say. Don't take off on your own. But these guys are all, in their own right, every one of them are preachers. And every one of them love to preach. This is a school we have with over 900 kids. I think it's 987. They changed some of them. They sit on the floor. They have a thatch roof. We're building buildings for them for the rainy season. We've got four buildings built now, and we're replacing these. But these are the buildings that we're building. You see them? There's three there. Now there's four. There's one on the end of it. I don't have a picture of it yet. But the kids come twice, two classes a day, half a day in the morning, half a day at night. When we get all of our classes, we'll have all day classes, because we don't want them going through the grasses at night because of snakes bite them. But they're kids. There's hundreds. And they all speak French, and they've never seen a white man, so they think you're a spirit. And they want to touch you, because if they touch you, then they'll have good-looking children. Okay? But they're scared of you, too. And so they're just back and forth all the time. And they bring them out, and they march them in the field. When I'm there, and I buy them cookies, I buy a big case of little cookies, and we put them into trays, and they bring them out by classes, and you have the first graders, which are little ones, and their legs are about this high, and they're singing, Alouette, Janty, Alouette. And then we put in English, and we put in Bible in the classrooms, because it's a federal curriculum. It's a government curriculum. It's a government school, too. I mean, you know, it's our school. But it's government curriculum, and so the teenagers will be singing, I've Decided to Follow Jesus, because they're learning English, all right? And it looks like a battalion out there. I mean, there's 900 kids, and it's hot and sweaty, and bugs and flies, and they're marching, and it's just, it's one of the most moving things in the world, because, you know, in 10 years, every one of them will be adults. And they'll be Christians. And the world will be a better place because of it. And each one of them will be a better place. when I first come back to America, it's like Technicolor, because that country's all black. Everybody's black. Everybody's black. Okay? When I first went there, we were there for a year, I'd been in the Navy for 22 years, and Dee Dee said, she went home for the summer with the kids and said, will you grow a beard? And I said, well, I've never grown a beard. She said, I like seeing the beard. I said, okay, I'll grow a beard. I worked with the church for a year there. I went out in the bush and just stayed on the road for a month, you know, a couple months. And I come back, about 3 months, I think. I come back, and I'm driving my van around, and about six or eight of the brethren come up to my van, and they say, excuse me, have you seen Brother Worley? And it has World Bible School on the van, you know. And I thought, well, if I say something, they'll recognize my voice. And I said, yeah, I've seen Brother Worley. And they said, where is he? We've been looking all over for him. And I started laughing. I said, brother, it's me. I'm Brother Worley. And they said, like this, big mouth and eyes, big eyes, and they said, Brother Worley, we didn't recognize you. All you white people look alike. And it's true, in a black society where everybody's black, when they see a white person, all they see is my color. They don't see my beauty. They don't see my definition. All they see is color. And they don't know how to look past the color. I used to think all Asian people look alike until I went to Vietnam and China and Japan. I can tell the difference between a Chinese and a Japanese and a Filipino and a Taiwanese because I know how to look past the ethnicity or the color. All Asians don't look alike, brother. They really don't. And you have to look past the color. And that's what Jesus did in his ministry. Jesus was able to look past the person. He was able to look past the appearance and see the person. And that's what we need to do with every person that you meet. Treat that person like that person knows something you need to know. That's my message for you this morning. Treat every stranger as a person that knows something that you need to know. And if you treat him that way, he'll listen to you or she'll listen to you, and you can tell them the gospel because that's something they need to know. And the blessings will be there. And you'll see people baptized into Christ. These are the kids. I love them. They're just... Kids are kids. I don't care what the colors, what their ages, what their nationalities. The kids are kids. They're just unreal. Of course, Niger is the poorest country in the world. It's not Somali. It's Niger. We've got a churches in Niger now. This man was converted to Christ. We bought him a mule because his father threw him out. His parents threw him out of the house. He used that mule to carry water to the villages through high school. He learned English. He went to Joss. He got an undergraduate degree from the School of Biblical Studies, Joss. He's now, he graduated with us, four-year degree. To get a four-year degree from our school, you got to take 2 years of Greek, 2 years of Hebrew. It's not easy. But he made it. His name is Sule. He's a single guy. We teamed him with a man from the Ivory Coast who has a wife and three girls. And he came from the Ivory Coast, and they went to Niger, and they started a church. And this is what you have in Niger. I mean, it's poor, really poor. This is where the seals, where they're killed. They killed a couple of seals out here. I was out here two weeks before they were riding a motorcycle. This is a house. This is a family that lives here. I mean, it's really primitive, really primitive. You don't knock doors here. You just... call them out. This is our church building. We have a church building in Niger now. They speak French, and the church is growing in the whole country, and it's registered with the federal government. So we continue to grow. In early May, I went back to Uganda. They invited me over to. We started working in Uganda, bringing Ugandans to Nigeria, all the way across Africa, to get them an undergraduate degree in Bible, and sending them back. We finally started a school, and I went to the graduation at the school, Ugandan Christian Bible College. We built this building and started the work, started bringing people from South Sudan down to Uganda and the Ugandans. I went over in early May, had 14 graduates that went on the field. Some of them are from the South Sudan. South Sudan is the only place where I saw two women walking along the street where I was tempted to ask them if I could take a picture with them because they were both over 7 feet tall. Maybe they looked like a midget. I didn't come up to their shoulders. I mean, I was like this. They were 7 feet tall. They looked like the Tower of Babel. They were attractive women, but I mean, how many women do you ever see 7 feet tall? There's some. we're making inroads into those tribes too. But I was sitting there and they brought out two cakes and I said, what's the cakes for? And he says, well, one's for the graduation, the other for anniversary. And I said, what do you mean anniversary? And they said, yeah, it's our anniversary. It's our 10th anniversary, Brother Worthing. God, 10 years. School's been going for 10 years. I didn't know that. I ate a piece of the cake. But we've been at it since 10 years in that country. And we're turning out men and women like these. And it keeps growing. This year, I had a man decide to join me in the work. His name is Chuck and Marcy Corden. He served 34 years in the United States Navy. He's a full commander. He graduated, he got out of the Navy 2 years ago. He went to the Memphis School of Preaching for 2 years. He graduated in May, 4-0. First one has ever done it, Memphis School of Preaching. He got 4-0 average. And then I took him in the 1st of August. I took him and Marcy to Nigeria. He's teaching 2 classes at the School of Biblical Studies, JOS, this semester. And they'll come home in December after teaching for a semester. He's going to live in Savannah, and he's going to work with us. And he'll be here next year. Good-looking guy. Got 2 daughters. They're from New York. New York State. All right? I want you to pray for them. They're going to come home in early December. I appreciate you all. You guys are a benchmark and model. This congregation has done things, like I say, like bringing Marshall Kaiser here. It's one step above. Sending your preacher, one step above. You're not a normal congregation. You're not laid back doing nothing. You'll take steps. You'll do what you need to do. You'll reach out and God will bless you. There's nothing that you cannot do. When Paul says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, he actually means it. And when I look back on some of the things that we've done in Nigeria through God moving with us, all he wants is a set of hands most times. And if you do it, he'll do it. He'll accomplish things through you. Last week, I baptized 5 guys in the county jail. Those, what are you doing in the county jail? 5 different people. And these guys had more tattoos than I do. But they're men and women and they're humans and they need Christ Jesus in their life. And with him you can do everything. You can have meaning. Let me close with this. I'm a minute and a half over. This year I take special studies in my lifespan. This year, in the 4 years, Josh Stern, I put this out every quarter. They're out in Josh Stern. Get one, read it. That'll tell you a lot more, like our IT programs that we're doing in Josh and a lot of other stuff that you can do. You can help us. You can come. You can visit with us. Have one girl come and stay 6 months with me when she got out of university and before she got her winning for her master's degree. Okay? You can come too. Lost my train of thought. Is this a station? This is a train station. Lord willing, I plan to start writing next year. I'll visit with you. You'll always be a part of me. Hagerstown, Maryland has always been a part of me. Always will be, I guess. Can I tell my story? let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a personal story. I was on a ship out of Philadelphia, and 2 guys were from Hagerstown, Maryland. They were married, and I was married. I just got married, and so we went on North Atlantic cruises. And a guy from Maryland here at Hagerstown, one of the guys who married, his wife stayed with my wife, and we had a little apartment in Paulsboro, New Jersey. And I've heard of Hagerstown, Maryland, but this was way, way back, okay? And we just got married. And we went to the North Atlantic. And through the years, we separated. And so when I came to Hagerstown, I stayed with Greg and his family, all right? Bowman. And I asked Greg, I says, there's a friend of mine in the Navy that's a Catholic guy, I know. And this was way before I was a Christian and before I went to Vietnam. And I haven't seen him in 30 years. can I look him up? And so I looked him up, and he had a bar downtown. He owned a tavern downtown in Main Street. I guess it's Main Street, downtown. And his name was Gary. And so I called him on the phone, and I said, you got to come. And I said, well, Greg, I don't have a car. Will you take me downtown to this tavern to see Gary? And Greg was a deacon in your congregation. You might want to tell people this later. You might have to have a meeting about this. Okay. So anyway, he told me, yeah, I'll take you down. So we went down. We went in the tavern. Gary lived upstairs. We went up, and I held Bible study with him and talked to him about the Lord. Okay? And I said, have you seen Jim? And he said, Jim Muggin. I said, yeah. He said, oh, he works out in prison. And I said, well, could you call him and see if he's there? He called him. He said, okay, yeah, he's there. He wants you to come out. He's a guard out there, and he's going to visit with you. I said, great. I said, Greg, would you take me to the prison? He said, yeah, we'll run out there. So we ran out. Now, this is when I'm just doing a report here, okay? So we run out to the prison. I met Jim, and I talked to him for a while. We talked about the Lord. And then we went home late that night. I told Greg when we got home, I said, now, this is what life's all about here. I said, you talk to the wrong people and let them stay at your house. They'll take you to a bar. You'll end up in prison, but you need to go home. And we made the route. And that's what Hagerstown, and that's what this congregation has meant to me through the years. You remind me of a bunch of people in taverns. No. But if you love the Lord, and together we cause things to happen that defy the imagination. I want you to go with me sometime. If you can, go with me. Someday, bring Boy here. When he gets his PhD, gets his doctorate, just bring him over. Visit with him for a little while. You'll love him. But the big thing is you and your life. If your life is in Christ, it has meaning. It has meaning to your life. Looking back at your life, you want to see meaning. You want to see a purpose. You have a purpose in Christ. You're here at this time, in this place, in the history of mankind, in the Lord's church, for a reason. God has put you here at this time. He's in control. And if you give your life to Him, He'll do things in your life and cause things to happen in your life that defy the imagination. It literally will. I know. I can testify about it. If you're subject to the gospel invitation, won't you come while we're standing?